Welcome to PCI's Code It podcast series. I'm Kristen Johansson, Editor-in-Chief of PCI Magazine. This month, we are discussing pigments. The production and distribution of high-performance pigments from 2017 to 2027 is subject to an unprecedented set of circumstances that are creating dramatic change in business conditions. These critical changes, including the impact of COVID-19, are outlined in a recent Smithers report titled The Future of High-Performance Pigments to 2027. Today, I have invited the report's author, Keith Jakes, Associate Consultant for Smithers, to join me for a conversation on this topic. Hi, Keith. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
Good. All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. My first question is, what changes have resulted in the production and distribution of pigments since the onset of COVID?
As everybody is aware, we've all been subject to various restrictions, lockdowns, lack of production. And all these obviously had an impact not only on the pigment industry, but also on their customers and their customers' customers. And the result of all that disruption, particularly during 2020, was that, of course, production facilities were closed. If a production facility was open, there was no saying you could have a transport. Demand went because people were largely working from home or working some at home, some in the office. And the net result of all that meant that the demand for high-performance pigments during 2020 dropped by about 9% in volume. The value was slightly more, 10%, because as the oil prices started to drop in 2020, then a lot of prices started to fall as well. So the value went down slightly more than the volume. Another impact, which probably is less well recognized, is the fact that a lot of R&D activity was also badly affected during 2020 and into 2021, because it's very difficult to run development programs when you're either working from home or maybe only going into the office or the lab for a couple of days a week. So you have a kind of vacuum formed by the COVID, that if something was nearly ready at the end of 2019, fine. But if you still were in the middle of a development program at the start of 2020, then that probably didn't get very far until well into 2021.
Right.
Then following that, of course, then the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, economies started to open. Demand started to coming back much quicker than people imagined. And so that people's problem then was not that they didn't have any orders, it's that they had too many. And a lot of production facilities, whether it's for raw materials, whether it's for pigments production, or whether it's even for their end use paint and ink production, was probably still running on part staff, because COVID infections were still sweeping around and people were having to self-isolate. So it's very likely nobody was running with a full complement of staff anytime at all during certainly the first half of 2021. But the big problem, of course, as we've seen, and you see it if you go into a supermarket, you see it if you go into any kind of shop, is the fact that transportation was completely thrown out of kilter. Not all, but a lot of the containers were in the wrong place. They were perhaps still waiting to be unloaded from ships. They were still, or if they'd been unloaded, they were still waiting to be unloaded at the end point, which meant that nobody could transport things very easily. The net effect of that, of course, is that transport costs went up. And cost of shipping a container, there are a lot of figures around, but it's widely reported that cost of shipping a container went up by something like tenfold during 2021, beginning of 2021. So that made everything expensive. it affected, because there was supply chain problems in actually organizing the transportation. You couldn't get all the raw material, you couldn't get all the feedstocks, and that affected everybody along the supply chain, from the people making the intermediates, from people making the pigments, people making coatings, paints, cosmetics, whatever, and then to the people making the finished goods. So it caused a lot of problems during 2021, and filtering over, I think, probably into 2022. We may still see some ripples of this going into 2023. The big impact, of course, was that all this had an effect on prices. So from 2020, when prices started to fall a little bit because oil prices dropped, oil bounced back again 2021. Transport costs went up, raw material costs went up, end product prices went up, and the whole thing is running at a very high level now. In terms of pigment production, we, based on our research, we would say that it's probably not going to get back to 2019 levels, to somewhere towards the end of 2023.
Okay, Keith, what end-use pigment trends have been impacted by the pandemic?
I think the two biggest industry segments that have been affected by the pandemic have been the demand for transportation coatings. Cars is the obvious one because that's the biggest part of that, but also buses, rail stock, aircraft. All these have been affected in 2021, and I think car production fell by something like 20 to 30% during 2020 over 2019. So it's had a big impact on demand for those, which is a big area of demand for high performance pigments. The other segment where it's had a big impact has been in cosmetics. People working from home, or if you're out, you're wearing a mask, and pigments are used obviously in color cosmetics, so eyeshadow, lipsticks, nail polish. And if people aren't going out, they're not going to wear them, so they're not going to buy them. If they are out, you've probably got a mask, so putting a lot of nice bright lipstick on is not going to have much of an impact. So, yeah, I mean, that's also is very badly. It's probably about the same level as the transportation industry, probably somewhere getting between 20 and 30% down.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that market. I'm so focused on coding, so that definitely makes
sense. Well, yeah, I mean, particularly for things like metallics, pearlescence, and some of the inorganic pigments, it's not as big as for the coatings, but it's a sizable market, and it's one that may well not come back in the form that it was before the pandemic.
Right, and it seems like lasting longer than the decline in the demand for automotive coatings.
Well, of course, automotive coatings production picked up end of 2020, 2021, right, and everything started to go, and by the middle of 2021. Car production was running something like 20, having dropped by 20-30% in 2020, it was back up to that, to the old kind of levels, the 2019 levels, by the first half of 2021. But the problem then, and it's again coming back to the supply chain problem, the world suddenly ran out of semiconductors. And so you had companies like Toyota and Volkswagen and a lot of the other ones closing factories down for 3-4 weeks at a time because they couldn't get the semiconductors to make their cars. And as you know, a car now is such an electronic minefield that with these things are essential. You can't operate, you can't even get into a car without a semiconductor. So that had a big effect, and so by the end of 21, the car production was probably still 3-4% below where it should have been. So it had a big drop in the second half after coming back strongly in the first half. And I think that's another area that actually did quite well during the pandemic was decorative paints or architectural coatings. People were at home. Certainly in North America and Europe, where there's a strong tradition of DIY, then people took that opportunity to repaint their houses.
Right.
So there was a big demand for decorative paint. People were putting off redecoration projects, perhaps for the 2 years before that. Suddenly they had all this time to do it, so they did it. So actually the decorative paint market in these two regions actually did quite well. Not so much in Asia Pacific, because there they rely heavily on other people to do the painting. But so that if people are not coming into work, then there are no painters to do the decorating. But in Europe, North America, but the problem now in 21 and at the end of 21 and beginning of 22, because of the raw material supply chain problems, actually you go into a DIY store now and you see a lot of empty shelves because people can't get hold of the paints. Mm-hmm. So what was a good year for 2020 is perhaps not quite so good in 2021 and the beginning of
22. Right. Keith, what does Smithers forecast for the global pigment industry over the next several years in terms of demand, value, and recovery from the pandemic and the supply chain problems?
Well, in 21, what we saw was, as I said before, in 20, we saw a drop in demand in volume of pigment for about 9%. That bounced back by about 4% in 21. It probably would have been higher if all the supply chains had worked properly, but obviously it was constrained by the fact that supply chains weren't operating correctly. I forecast another 4% growth for 2022. And then probably a steady rather than spectacular growth over the next 5 years. We still think there are going to be some problems, whether it's in terms of supply chain over the next, well into 23, which will hold things back a little bit, and then people will try and catch up perhaps in 24, 25. But I think it would be a little bit optimistic to think that suddenly everything's going to be running at 5-7% market growth over that time. Prices would still be affected, I think. I think we've still probably not seen the effects of all these additional costs being fed into selling prices for pigments. So I think pigment market will try and catch up on that over the next couple of years. So prices will grow much faster than volume sales. Another thing that we've seen completed over the last 12 months have been the consolidation within the pigment industry. So we had the DIC BASF deal, which was agreed towards the end of 2019. But in fact, has only just been completed in 2021, middle of 2021. And then we had Clariant, who was saying that it wanted to sell its pigment business even before the DIC BASF deal was announced. And they were searching hard. And finally, they've now completed a deal with Hubac. So those two deals are now out of the way. Slowed down by the pandemic for sure, but now they're out of the way. Will we see other consolidations? I don't think you can rule it out, especially if things start to get tight and people start to suffer a little bit in terms of profitability. The other thing, of course, is that Asia Pacific, certainly over the next 5 years, will continue to be the fastest growing region. China probably a little bit more steady, but then India should recover from the pandemic over the next probably 12 months. It's probably they're not there yet, I don't think, but maybe within 12 months' time, then things will start to get better there. And then you'll also get some of the other Southeast Asian countries starting to pick up, certainly manufacturing from China, because they then become the low-cost producers.
Yeah, I actually was curious about Asia and how the growth there is affecting the players in the pigment market.
Yeah, I mean, there has been a big, I mean, people have rushed to China to either to get production in. The certain Western producers have rushed to China to get production in, to take account of the big chemical industry in China, lower costs, and also the booming Chinese market. But what that has done is it's brought pigment production technologies to the Chinese, into China, so that now Chinese local domestic companies are now starting to improve the quality of their products, starting to look to the higher performance pigment market where they will make more money. So yeah, it's opened. It's been good from one point of view, from the low cost production, but it's probably opened the door to a lot of these Chinese companies to attack their markets in other parts of the world.
Keith, what pigment class currently has the largest market share in both the architectural and industrial coatings industries?
I mean, I suppose the biggest one is titanium dioxide in both of them, but of course that didn't come under the scope of the high performance pigment report, but it is there. It's probably the biggest one in decorative architectural coatings, and plays a big part in industrial coatings, particularly for things like domestic appliance coatings. A lot of building components are white, so it's there. But in terms of high performance pigments for industrial coatings, the biggest type of pigment being used is probably metallics and pearlescents. Because there's a big market within high performance pigments for the transportation industry and cars, and increasingly trucks and buses are using metallic finishes or pearlescent finishes, then these are the big pigment types being used in those applications. In architectural coatings, decorative coatings, it's more the inorganic pigments. So we've all mentioned titanium dioxide as being, everybody has white white paints in the house. But for the other kinds of whether you want a colour, then it's more likely you use a complex inorganic colour pigment, or an iron oxide pigment, or even an ultramarine, because these pigments give you good performance in terms of durability. They give you good opacity, and they give you good cost basis. So for architectural, it's inorganic pigments.
Okay, so my final question is, what technology trends in coatings are evolving that involve pigments?
I had to think about this one a little bit hard, because I mean, the big shift, of course, has been over the last 20 years or more, we've moved more to water-based paints rather than solvent-based paints, to powder coatings, to UV coatings. All of these brought challenges for the pigment industry, but these are now fairly well established. And okay, there's probably still some challenges there, but it's a path which is now well trodden. So these are now mainstream rather than technology trends. Two big trends that I think are more important today in terms of pigments. One is ways of improving energy consumption, making production easier by the use of pigments. So this can be reducing costs, because everybody is trying to reduce their energy consumption, they're trying to optimize their costs, they're trying to improve the efficiencies of what they're doing. And by introducing easy to disperse pigments, which you can stir in rather than have to mill in a ball mill or a bead mill or whatever, these are easier, quicker to produce, and of course consume less energy to make the paints or the inks or whatever. And the other factor is to improve the opacity of particularly organic pigments so that you can use less pigment to achieve the same shades. So again, there you're saving on raw material costs, and that is an obvious benefit to the pigment customers. The other big factor in terms of innovation, I think, is there's a growing demand for smart pigments, for smart coatings and inks. So we're seeing this particularly in the inorganic pigments for infrared reflective pigments. So these are pigments that if you use them in building coatings, they will reflect the sun back from the building and prevent it overheating. So that A, keeps the building cooler in the first place, but also you're not then having to put as much energy into air conditioning systems, for instance, to cool the building down. So this is important. This colored pigments still have a long way to go to meet the target, which is that of white pigment, which has an 80% solar reflective index. Colored pigments are somewhere around the 40, maybe getting up towards 50%. So there's still a gap, but they still have an impact and still have a benefit in terms of cool coatings, whether it's for a roof or whether it's for a siding. And you're seeing a lot of powder coatings now, and also liquid coatings being introduced for building panels, which are using these infrared reflective pigments. The other area of interest and where there's a lot of work going on is in the color coats for autonomous vehicles. And these are being guided using radar or LiDAR detection systems, which basically send out a signal, and which is bounced back from something which is close by to tell it that it's there and they must avoid it. And if the pigment on the vehicle you're trying to detect absorbs the signal rather than reflecting it, you have a problem because it won't be detected or won't be detected as easily. So there will be a lot of work as the work on autonomous vehicles continues. There will be a lot of work to not only get pigments which don't absorb, but actually will reflect and maybe even enhance that reflection. So help the LiDAR or the radar system rather than just be a passive part of it. I think we're some way off autonomous vehicles. I'm not sure I'm ready to go in one yet, but it is obviously, it is an area that is a lot of work going on. And the other one is what is becoming a big issue is the ease of recycling plastics. And this is easy enough to do with clear plastics and white plastics, but it can be difficult for dark plastics within recycling plants, because you detect, they separate the different types of plastic by bouncing an infrared signal off the plastic bits that are on a conveyor, and they will tell you whether it's PVC or whether it's polypropylene or whether it's polyethylene. If you have a dark, something that's black, or a dark brown or a dark green, that pigment again will tend to absorb the infrared signal instead of reflecting it. And so the equipment will discard that bit of plastic, and then that goes to landfill. Mm. Now the key is to have, again, infrared reflective pigments, dark pigments, which will send the signal back to the receptor, and it will actually mean that you can actually recycle those dark plastics much more easily.
It's really interesting. I hadn't heard of the recycling issues. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, our local authority, they say don't bother putting black plastic or dark brown plastic in with the recycling because it'll just rip. And in a lot of cases, if you have those materials in there, instead of pulling them out, a lot of the recycling systems will just they'll say, well, it's contaminated the whole batch. So you put two or three bits of that in with some plastic, which can be recycled. Mm-hmm. They'll just scrap the whole sack of material. And so what should essentially be good plastic we can be recycled under normal circumstances, that also goes to landfill. So doesn't help. And then the other area that's, of course, is on everybody's lips is bio-based. And it is a growing topic of conversation and development, particularly in the coatings industry, in the ink industry, and a lot of in plastics industry, that they want things which, A, you're making them on bio-sourced feedstocks, and then once you finish them, they are biodegradable or compostable. Now, the problem with most pigments is that you can't get enough of the feedstocks from bio sources today. So it's a very difficult to produce a bio-based pigment. What you do with the polymer is you make a basic chemical, but from biomass. But with a pigment, you can't get the kind of chemicals you need to make the pigments. So that's very difficult. So the best thing that the pigment people can do at the moment is make sure that the pigments that they're producing are compatible with recycling systems and will not affect biodegrading processes or composting processes. And there are pigments on the market now for small plastic throwaway components, which will not affect the biodegradability of the plastic.
Okay, well, thank you, Keith, for joining me on this podcast. I really appreciate your insight, and I do enjoy these podcasts so much because I always learn at least one new thing, and I learned several new things today. So thank you.
Good. Well, I think it's been a pleasure. thanks very much for asking me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yes, it's been a pleasure having you. To our listeners, if you're interested in learning more about this market report, you can visit the Smithers website, smithers.com. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast as well. Until next time.